I was having difficulty coming up with today's topic. I had some forewarning, but obviously you procrastinate as much as you can, and then after you start to like actually get your act together, sometimes it's just still not coming to you. So I was kind of trying to figure out something this past week, and the Bible series that we did this past year has the podcast option, which is how I was listening to it, and then some of the podcast episodes didn't download properly, so they would get like 2/3 of the way through and then stop, and then either you'd have to re-download them or finish them out on YouTube. And so one of those was still in my queue, and I hadn't like finished it. So every time I turned on my car, it would just go to the end of where the download had happened and repeat one phrase over and over again. And it was a phrase in Genesis, in one of Jess's readings, Genesis, let's see, where am I going? I think it's Genesis 30. And the phrase that Jess's voice kept saying to me every time I turned on my car was, "And God listened to Leah." So I was like, okay, well, I'm at my wit's end. I don't know what I'm talking about. Maybe I'll go and look at that and extrapolate something from that. So I went there, and initially I was going to kind of be talking about, you know, listening to, like, speaking to God and hearing from God. But it kind of morphed into being more about a talk on our responses to blessings. That whole passage where that phrase is from is the segment where, you know, Jacob marries first Leah and then Rachel, and it's not exactly what you'd call a happy family. There's a lot of infighting and problems. So basically my talk is going to be looking at the 12 children that result from those two marriages and the two concubines that are also part of that, and how those names progress, what the implications of those things are in those two women's lives, Leah and Rachel's life, and how they're responding to the unfortunate circumstances that were arranged. So I guess if you want to bring up the first slide, just for context sake here, that second slide, I guess. So the interpersonal setup to this is obviously Laban has tricked Jacob. He initially wanted to marry the younger of the sisters, Rachel. So he's worked 7 years. He gets tricked into marrying Leah. Has to work another 7 years for Rachel. And he consequently probably resents both Leah and Laban. Leah, from her perspective, either was forced or was complicit in this deception of Jacob. And, I mean, in front, you would think she'd have the advantage, just being the oldest. She'd kind of maybe assume that she was going to get married first. But she is actually in a loveless marriage and was spurned for her younger sister. Rachel has the advantage of being more beautiful, being loved by Jacob, but has also got the baggage of being used by Laban to get 7 more years of work out of Jacob. And she's also barren, so there's that aspect of not being particularly happy with life. It's a little bit ironic that Jacob is tricked into marrying Leah, because he's a bit of a trickster himself. He scams his brother out of his birthright and all that. So what goes around comes around a bit for Jacob here. I'm not going to really dive very deep into Jacob's aspect on this. He's definitely not a great guy in a lot of aspects too, but I didn't really focus in on that. So basically when I was doing this, I kind of looked at the etymology of all of the names and what phrase is spoken in relation to the birth of each of these 12 children. So in terms of etymologies, Leah means, it's kind of an unfortunate name, it means wild cow or wearied. It's kind of an interesting pairing with Rachel, because her name just means you, as in a female sheep. So I guess they were kind of a pairing in Laban's mind of, you know, we're going with the animal theme here. Leah is less beautiful, has weak eyesight, and Rachel's much more attractive. So I'll just read and talk as I go, as each of the births happen here. We're going to go to Genesis 29, if you want to turn there. And we're going to start up in verse 31. When the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, that word unloved means actually hated, literally, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. So Leah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Reuben, for she said, the Lord has surely looked on my affliction. Now, therefore, my husband will love me. You can go to that slide. So that's the phrase, the Lord has surely looked on my affliction. Now my husband will love me. So Reuben means see a son, that phrase, see a son, or look a son. So the indication here is that Leah wants the material sight of Reuben to cause Jacob to love her. She views Reuben as a means to achieve love for herself. In her mind, producing a son for Jacob will result in his valuing or loving her. So that's kind of an unfortunate mentality to bring into, you know, your relationship with your son, I guess. I'm viewing him as a means to love for yourself. So with each of these, I'm just going to give my takeaway. Some of these kind of hot takes, so take it with a grain of salt. If you come up with other explanations, that's maybe perfectly legitimate. But the thing that I kind of took away with from this naming is that a Christian's value should be derived from God's view of us, not man's. We should be content if theoretically everything we did was unseen by others and we just had God's approval. There's that Matthew 6 verse that says, do things in secret and God will reward you. So the sight of the sight of Reuben is like what Leah hopes Jacob will see Reuben and then love her. And I guess a question we can ask ourselves, I'm going to have kind of a question we can ask ourselves with each of these namings, is do we look to material things as a way to feel self-validation? Is our value tied to what we produce or provide for others? So I think, yeah, it's interesting with these first three. It's looked, heard, joined. So kind of the aspect of sight, hearing, and touch as being the things that are being leaned on in the naming of these individual children. So we can continue on to Simeon. Then she conceived again and bore a son and said, because the Lord has heard that I am unloved, he has therefore given me this son also. And she called his name Simeon. Again, we see that that word unloved means hated. So she's obviously not in a great marriage. Just feels unseen and unheard. So my note for Simeon was that Leah thinks or feels that God has heard, understood, or taken to heart her affliction, and consequently Jacob will come around. So the question I would say is, do we point to a blessing from God to validate ourselves? This blessing indicates God's favor, therefore I'm in the right and others should recognize this. So the idea that she's saying God has heard me, so she's putting on, like, God, that since God has blessed me, therefore others should see that God has blessed me and I should be validated because of that. And you can see this in juxtaposition with Rachel, who hasn't had a kid yet. So all external facets are pointing to, you know, Leah's being the blessed and Rachel has not been blessed by God. Therefore, you know, Leah's in the right in the carnal mind. Can go on to Levi. She conceived again and bore a son and said, "Now this time my husband will become attached to me because I have borne him three sons. Therefore his name is called Levi." So attached or joined. It's kind of sad. It's one of those circumstances where you can sometimes see this in marriages that are in trouble, that they'll have another kid just because they think the kid will save the marriage. Because, you know, there's an extra point of connection. So the thought that came to me with this is, do we seek to manipulate others by joining them to us through circumstances? Like, you know, you can manipulate a situation such that it's an extra effort for the other person to get out of the situation. So Jacob should have been joined to Leah through the fact that they were married, and that should have been good enough. But she's using children as a means to adhere him to her in a carnal, manipulative sort of way. Again, I think it's interesting that they have to do with those three, you know, looked, here, joined, kind of those ways of getting validation through physical manifestation. And then we have a bit of a change up here, and the fourth son for Judah. She conceived again and bore a son and said, "Now I'll praise the Lord." Therefore she called his name Judah. Then she stopped bearing. And in terms of Levi, kind of an interesting aside on that before I move on to Judah. This is from a site that I was kind of getting some thoughts from. It says, "In the theocratic structure of Israel, the Levites were the people who promoted social cohesion. They had no land of their own, but were dispersed among the tribes, infusing them all equally with the same education, thus forging a unified national identity across clans." So just that this name, you know, of being joined, that's the function of the Levites into perpetuity. They are a glue that kind of binds Israel, the 12 tribes, together, because they join them all together, because they're dispersed throughout them. So it's kind of interesting that the name kind of goes down the centuries that way. But moving on to Judah, "Now I will praise the Lord," is the phrase that's used. So Judah means "let him be praised." Leah turns from trying to get Jacob's attention and love to praising God for the gift of the child. So this is an appropriate response for a child. Blessings should not be grasped and used for carnal benefits or manipulation of others or situations. So Judah, it's interesting, ends up being the preeminent tribe in Israel. Reuben kind of gets taken out of first place because he sleeps with his father's concubine. And then Levi and Simeon are also taken off the totem pole because they have that incident with Dinah, where they kill the whole village. So they're also struck down lower, and Judah ends up being the preeminent brother in the 12. So I think Judah is probably the one that's probably the best out of all these 12 in terms of the mother's response to it. I think, so the thing I jotted down here was, if our first response is to praise God for a blessing, our entire focus is redirected towards God. It's not on the blessing so much, or what the blessing will do for us. This will help us hear what he wants us to do with the blessing and help to glorify him through it instead of using it to meet our desired ends. So she's not manipulating Jacob in any way with Judah. She's just praising God for him. And then that chapter ends by saying that she stopped bearing at that point in time anyway. And then we get into chapter 30, which opens up with a bit of a bang here. When Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister and said to Jacob, "Give me children or else I die," which is a little bit dramatic, but still, I can see where she's coming from. "And Jacob's anger was aroused against Rachel, and he said, 'I am in the am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb?' So she said, 'Here is my maid Bilhah, go into her, and she will bear a child on my knees, that I also may have children by her.' Then she gave him Bilhah, her maid, as wife, and Jacob went into her, and Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son.
Then Rachel said, God has judged my case, and he has also heard my voice and given me a son. Therefore, she called his name Dan. So just in terms of setup here, that initial couple verses of chapter 30, Rachel, this is kind of an interesting juxtaposition. Rachel has Jacob's love and attention, which is exactly what Leah wants, but is miserable because she has no children, which is exactly what Leah has. So it's kind of one of those the grass is greener on the other side situations. We don't know if they swap places, if Leah would have been content with just Jacob's love and attention and Rachel would have been happy with just having children. But I think it's a pretty clear indication that in a good marriage you would have both and there wouldn't be a competition. So if Rachel had a relationship with God, which is doubtful because she seals her father's idols a couple chapters down from here, so she's not exactly an excellent example. Her trial would be to find contentment with the blessing she has while not being bitter about her sister's children. So that would be the Christian point of view. I don't think you can necessarily read Rachel as being a Christian here, but... But instead of this, she abuses Bilhah because she's somebody who has no bone in the fight. She doesn't even have agency in this. She uses Bilhah to achieve her own ends. And this, in turn, causes Leah to resort to the same tactic with Zilpah in the battle for Jacob's attention. So a question just from this section that we can ask ourselves is whether we're using other people to achieve a perceived good for ourselves. I mean, this is a very extreme example where these two wives are using their maidservants to achieve their own ends without taking them into account. But I think we can definitely use other people to achieve our desired ends, even if they're perceived good things. So that's something we can keep an eye on for ourselves. So Dan means judge. It comes from the phrase where she says, God has judged my case and has heard me and given me a son. So Rachel takes God's gift of Dan to Bilhah, so it's really a gift to Bilhah more so than Rachel. It's not really vindication of Rachel as a twisted vindication for herself. She lives vicariously through her maid and believes that she is in the right. You can kind of see this, like the modern examples you see of this is that you can see parents who steer their children into a career or a spotlight that they had wished for themselves, but they use their children as a means to vicariously get the approval that they once sought. Like, you know, I really wanted to be good at X sport, and therefore I'm going to push my son into, you know, being excellent at that, or this area, or this talent, or whatever. And the kid might not be interested, but you're just using the kid to kind of live through the kid to, you know, relive your glory days. I think that's the modern example of this mentality. So the question from Dan that we can ask ourselves is, are we guilty of using others to reap accolades for ourselves? Do we use, it doesn't have to be children, obviously, but anybody to try to use them to reflect well on ourselves? And it's also good to note that the naming of Dan is Rachel taking God's blessing Bilhah with a child as vindication for her action, not something that's necessarily bears out in the real world. We'll move on to the next son here. Let's see. So verse 7, and Rachel's maid Bilhah conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. Then Rachel said, with great wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister, and indeed I have prevailed. So she called his name Naphtali. So Naphtali means my wrestlings, or it means my wrestlings with a kind of crafty connotation. So I think this name is the most evident one of like how much friction there was in this household and how much bitterness there was. Like, it's explicitly, I don't know if she said this in the presence of Leah and that she knew exactly where the naming came from, but it's pretty explicit that she's not exactly simpatico with her sister. So, it just really makes it pretty explicit how sad this is. I mean, these two sisters grew up together, and now they're at this point where they hate each other and very embittered against each other. And again, Rachel sees this child as vindication from God and is exulting that she's winning this war for Jacob's attention. So it's, yeah, not a good situation. Moving on to Gad. Okay. When Leah saw that she had stopped bearing, she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her to Jacob as wife. And Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a son. Then Leah said, "A troop comes." So she called his name Gad. That's one translation, is "a troop comes." Another translation you might see in your Bibles is "how fortunate." So it's kind of an interesting, it took me some looking into this to actually understand what was kind of being implied by this naming. So the word that Gad is derived from describes making an invasive cut, mostly in order to expose something valuable, or in its noun form may describe an invasive band of raiders. That's where the troop phrasing in the one translation is from. So the name Gad indicates a fortune which is was made with a troublesome, invasive effort. There are plenty of words to indicate treasure or felicity, but Leah named the son of her maid, choosing a painful word, not a joyous word. So the reason for this is she only gave Zilpah to Jacob because she couldn't conceive anymore. So the name Gad is talking about a wife's deep anguish, shame, and loneliness. It's not, she's not particularly happy with the situation. She wants, you know, it to be her own child, not her maid's child. She's actually compromising her own feelings just to try to win this war for Jacob's attention by using Zilpah like Rachel used Bilhah. So Leah only offers Zilpah to Jacob because she's no longer bearing children. He is viewed as a painfully bought fortune. Leah hurts herself by offering her maid in order to vie for Jacob's affection and one-up her sister. So, yeah, it's gotten into the territory where she's doing things that actually hurt herself in order just to, you know, vie for Jacob's attention. So the questions that came to mind from this child's name is, do we play the comparison game and try to one-up each other for worldly attention? Like, are we actively, you know, doing this comparison of, you know, this person's excelling in this area, I'm going to do whatever it takes to excel also, even if it's hurtful to myself? Do we have a spiteful mentality? Are we willing to go to the place of hurting ourselves in order to win whatever the scenario is? Because that's the point where this has reached. We then move on to Asher. Then and Leah's maid Zilpah bore Jacob a second son. Then Leah said, "I am happy, for the daughters will call me blessed." So she called his name Asher. So this one also, on the face of it, seems like it's a pretty nice name. But the name Asher, like the meaning happy, is kind of a happiness derived from setting things right in their proper order or progression towards what's right. So kind of the phrase right on, you know, like this is as it ought to be. So Leah is ascribing the gift of this child through Zilpah as setting things right, meaning she's one-upped her sister yet again. So God is on her side in this battle. She's got another son. She's, you know, got one more. So again, this is kind of would be read as a self-vindication, a blessing of God being a self-vindication. So the question we can ask ourselves in relation to Asher, I think, is do we have a false happiness derived from everything seemingly going our way? Do we read into the blessings God has given us by saying, I'm being blessed by God, therefore I'm in the right? You know, because I mean, anything that is a seeming blessing can also be a test from God as to what our response from it will be. So she could have named him something that was not a, you know, I'm there for, you know, beating my sister yet again in progeny. But it's, again, a one-upmanship. I think where I've seen this mostly is in board games like Catan. You know, towards the end of the game, somebody's, you know, just about to win, and you'll just spitefully, you know, thwart their plans and do something that's bad for yourself just so that, you know, they don't win the game and somebody else who hasn't been winning the whole time might have a chance of winning. So I think that's where I see this mentality mostly is that spiteful, you know, like, you know, I'm not going to let them win this easily. But I think it can be throughout life. Moving on to Issachar. So that's all of the concubines. Let's see. So there's a whole little story that predates Issachar, starting verse 14 of chapter 30. Now Reuben went in the days of the wheat harvest and found mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, "Please give me some of your son's mandrakes." But she said to her, "Is it a small matter that you have taken away my husband? Would you take away my son's mandrakes also?" And Rachel said, "Therefore he will lie with you tonight for your son's mandrakes." When Jacob came out of the field in the evening, Leah went out to meet him and said, "You must come in to me, for I have surely hired you with my son's mandrakes." And he lay with her that night. And God listened to Leah, and she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. Leah said, "God has given me my wages, because I have given my maid to my husband." So she called his name Issachar. So I think this is almost the saddest of all of them. She literally views Issachar as wages. Like, she, you know, bought him, like, worked for him. So, he, you know, that's what his name means, it's just wages. Or there is recompense, is another translation. So she's naming her son after the price she had to pay to rent her husband from his other wife. Kind of shows the heartbreak of Leah in the situation. It brought to mind the verse, "Wages of sin is death." So God gives Leah what she theoretically wants. This is the verse that I kept hearing. God listened to Leah. It says in verse 17. I don't know that that necessarily means that, you know. Yeah, I mean, again, it all comes down to Leah's response to the gift God gives her. So God gives Leah what she theoretically wants and is steadfastly working towards, but there is no joy or rest in it, and blessings when they come. She literally views him as a wage. And I think one of the things we can think about is that God often gives us what we think we want, so we can see the shallowness of it. People generally make progress toward goals that they set, but always at the cost of true riches. So we can ask ourselves if we're bent on attaining something that's good outside of God's will. Like, generally speaking, even worldly people, if they set a goal and they work diligently towards it, they'll achieve it. But that doesn't mean that that goal, even if it's a good thing, was what was best for them. So, yeah, just the... yeah, I think Issachar is a pretty sad name for a kid. We're going on to Zebulun. Let's see. Then Leah conceived again and bore Jacob a sixth son. And Leah said, "God has endowed me with a good endowment. Now my husband will dwell with me because I have borne him six sons." So she called his name Zebulun. So Zebulun's name means glorious dwelling place or wished for habitation. I think this is kind of Leah's, what she wants to manifest in her life. She recognizes that God has blessed her greatly, but she's still holding on to the idea that this will cause Jacob to love her. She's trying to manifest her ideal dwelling where she is with and loved by Jacob. What would be best is if Leah was content with this. But there's that little addendum that now that I have six sons, Jacob will love me on here. So she hasn't achieved this glorious dwelling place or wish for habitation. She's still in the wishing stage or hoping stage that this is what's going to pan out. So what would have been best is if she could have been content in a relationship with God. But I don't think that's necessarily what we can derive from her life. Leah does have one more child here. Verse 21, afterward she bore a daughter and called her name Dinah. So Dinah is the feminine form of the name Dan. So it's, again, judge. So this could, I mean, there's really no context with this. She doesn't say a phrase that we can derive anything from in relation to Dinah. It could be a subtle dig at Dan, who is Rachel's. Could be her saying, God has judged the situation and has sided with me. Or I'm not sure exactly. There's not much to go off of there. And going to end it with the last two from Rachel here. Verse 22, then God remembered Rachel, and God listened to her and opened her womb. And she conceived and bore a son and said, God has taken away my reproach. So she called his name Joseph and said, the Lord shall add to me another son. So Joseph means may he add or doubler. So it's interesting to note that Joseph has two sons himself, so he does double up, Ephraim and Manasseh. But also the naming is prescient in that Rachel does have one more son, so she does get another. I think that it's kind of maybe a bit of a turning for Rachel here. She's saying that she's now looking to God for... Yeah, you'd read it two different ways. You could say that she's looking to God in faith that he's going to add another son to her. Or you could see it as her wishfully saying that God's going to add another one to her. Like trying to manifest another son. But at any rate, it does seem a little more positive in that she is hoping for another son for herself and not forcing the issue with her maidservant Bilhah. So it seems that she has a little more faith that she will have the son as opposed to conniving to get one through Bilhah. So we're going to jump a bit because Benjamin doesn't show up for a few more chapters here. He go to Genesis 35 and verse 16 through 20. This is both Benjamin's birth and Rachel's death because she gives birth and dies because of it. It says, then they journeyed from Bethel, and when they were put a little distance to go to Ephrath, Rachel labored in childbirth, and she had hard labor. Now it came to pass when she was in hard labor that the midwife said to her, do not fear, you will have this son also. And so it was, as her soul was departing, for she died, that she called his name Ben-Oni, but his father called him Benjamin. So Rachel died and was buried on the way to Ephrath, that is Bethlehem. And Jacob set a pillar on her grave, which is the pillar of Rachel's grave to this day. So there's a couple of translations of Ben-Oni, which is what Rachel names him. It's either son of my sorrow or, conversely, son of my strength, with kind of a connotation of vigor or progeny. So Rachel doesn't say anything in this that we have written down here, but the midwife does. The midwife says, do not fear, you will have this son also. So I guess in context, we can kind of derive that, I mean, I think Rachel realized she was kaput at this point. I think the naming indicates that she embraced the opposite of the fear, the do not fear. She doesn't fear. She instead names him something with the connotation of strength, progeny, you know, continuation, vigor. She knows she's out, but she sees that Benjamin will be a continuation or a vigor. And then Benjamin is kind of just a slight change that Jacob does. He says, so this is straight from the people I was looking at some of these etymologies from. It says, it seems most likely that when Rachel dies, Jacob doesn't simply rename the boy. Instead, he respectfully amplifies the name that his wife had given him. So, son of my strength / vigor, progeny, becomes this son is strength, Benjamin. So, yeah, I mean, I think a hopeful reading of this is that Rachel kind of turns a corner in her relationship to her children and maybe Leah and Jacob, because her last two children, she doesn't have a kind of a vindictive meaning to their names. They're more hopeful and forward-looking. But I guess we won't know until we get to heaven whether Rachel showed up there or not. Yeah, so I think that's kind of what I had. I worked on this literally 4 hours yesterday, so it was kind of last minute. I would probably pack this out a little bit more, but yeah, if you have questions, go ahead. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Jacob, I don't think he was a very involved father aside from Joseph and Benjamin. Or husband, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I don't think he's an exemplar for being a husband at all. Yeah, I mean, the only things he says in this is he gets angry at Rachel for being upset that she doesn't have a child. I think he was very self-centered, generally speaking. Right. Yeah, he's not trying to be a conciliatory with his wives or be a intermediary or patch things up or anything. He's just kind of hands off, does whatever his wives tell him in relation to their concubines. Yeah. Not an exemplar in any way, shape, or form. Yeah. Yeah. Any further questions? Yeah, so I don't know if people were taking notes, but I can run through real quick the things that that came to mind for me when I was reading that in terms of the questions I was asking myself. So with Reuben, do we look to the material as a way to feel self-validation as our value tied to what we produce or provide to others? That's my takeaway or thing to think about. Simeon, do we point to a blessing from God to validate ourselves? This blessing indicates God's favor. I am the right. Others should recognize this. Levi, do we seek to manipulate others by joining them to us through circumstances? Judah, this one's a good one. We should just praise God for blessings that are given to us, and that'll keep our orientation in relation to the blessing right. Dan, let's see. Do we use others to get accolades for ourselves? Naphtali, do we try to one-up one another to, you know, be in the winning position? Gad, do we play the comparison game and try to one-up each other for worldly attention? Are we spiteful in our mentality? Do we hurt ourselves in order to help hurt others? Asher, do we have a false happiness derived from everything seemingly going our way? Everything's going right in life. I've been blessed, therefore I'm good. Issachar, are we bent on attaining some good outside of God's will? Zebulon, are we trying to manifest our desired outcome in spite of circumstances? Joseph, I think, is a positive one generally. She has faith that she's going to have another son. And Benjamin is also a positive one. She kind of is less self-centered and more forward-centered in terms of her progeny and the strength going forward.